I had a request. Good morning, by the way. I had a request not too long ago to do more of sort of my vampires and werewolves and mythical, mystical creatures explanation. So here we are. We are going to do this morning the witch, son of a witch. We're going to do witches. What do they mean? Why are they so prevalent in culture as a whole? Why do they share so many characteristics? What are they actually referring to? So mythology generally represents truths about the world that it is dangerous to talk about. Right? Truths about the world that are dangerous to talk about. So if sociopaths run your society, which is generally the case, if sociopaths run your society, you can't talk about that, usually, or throughout history you couldn't. So what do? Well, you create a myth of vampirism. Vampires. I'll put a link to the show that I did before. Vampires are usually an analogy or a fictionalized version, a fantastical version of sociopaths. You know, they can't see their own reflection. They drain the blood of others. They move in darkness and so on, right? So if you can't talk openly about the predators in your myths, in your midst, then you have to create myths in order to communicate the danger of these predators in a form which won't get you ostracized, exiled, killed, imprisoned, whatever, right? So what you do is you create a myth about a dangerous creature which matches human characteristics, and then you might say, oh, that guy's like a vampire, or, you know, it's kind of vampiric, and then all of those myths might do something to protect you. So you generally, on the bad side, you will create a constellation of destructive personality traits, wrap them in a myth, and then talk about that myth, right? So, for instance, in just about every fairy tale known to man, there is the evil stepmother, right? The evil stepmother, evil stepfather. Now, the Freudians, or a lot of early psychoanalysts, would say that this is splitting. And I subscribed to this view for a while, that the reason you create a stepmother is your real mother is nasty, vicious, mean, and cruel. And so, in your mind, you can't handle that. So what you do is you replace your real mother with a stepmother. That's not my real mother. She's been replaced by someone who's mean and cruel. Now, there is some truth in this. Like, everyone who's had a cruel mother in particular, seems to be more common with mothers, everyone who's had a cruel mother has imagined that there was an original mother there who was nice, who was then replaced. And there's some truth in that psychologically, of course, because if you have a cruel mother, you know, she wasn't born mean, vicious, and cruel. It was inflicted upon her. So there was an original mother when she was very little that was kinder, but then circumstances, violence, and to some degree choice as an adult, then renders her, destroys her, right? So there's a kind original mother deep down, and then there's mean mother that she turned into. So there is that. So the mother being replaced by cruelty has some psychological truth to it, but much more common, it's this thing called the Cinderella effect, where step-parents in general treat step-children more cruelly than they do their own biological children. And this should come as no particular surprise to anybody who understands sort of evolution and so on. Of course, you would invest more in your own offspring than in some other man's offspring or some other woman's offspring. So, but you can't generally call out the cruelty of your step-parent. So what you do is you write stories about cruel step-parents, right? Stories in general, and the more magical the story, the more fantastical the story, the more it's trying to tell you about dangerous people in your environment, and the more fantastical it is, the more dangerous the people are in your actual environment, right? So you have to mythologize things in order to communicate dangerous personality traits because it's too dangerous to point them out directly. So let's turn to witches. Now, witches are interesting, obviously. I mean, an archetype of a female manipulation, right? So witches have magical properties, and they tend to exist in two forms. There's not a lot of middle-aged witches out there in mythology. They tend to either be young and irresistibly sexy or beautiful, or like they're old crones with one tooth and goiters and creepy hair and, you know, you know, that kind of green-faced ugliness, right? So the other characteristics, of course, they consort with dark forces. I mean, there are good witches in stories, but they tend to be very rare. Mostly it's evil witches. The witches tend to be childless. And again, you can find exceptions. It's a general trend. Sorry, I don't, you guys are smart enough to know that I don't, you don't need me to say that, but I'll say it anyway from time to time. So they tend to be childless, and they will sometimes tend to be consumed by vanity. And they go from young and hot to old, bitter, vengeful, and vicious, with seemingly no intervening middle age. You don't see a lot of middle-aged witches. You don't see a lot of witches in their 40s. They're either like 20 and hot, or they're, you know, 80 and hunched over a cauldron. They consort with dark forces, and they don't have combat abilities, but they have great power to influence others, right? So I made the case years ago, I'll just touch on it briefly here, that wizards are sophists. Wizards are sophists. So wizards, I mean, they cast a spell. In other words, they're spelling, right? They cast a spell, and through their words, they manipulate reality, right? So a witch might summon up forces to attack a man. Well, of course, women can do that. You're in some bar with your brute of a boyfriend, and you want him to beat up some guy, so you'll say, oh, that guy grabbed my ass and called me a whore, and then the guy, no, I didn't, and right next thing you know. So your words, right, your words are spells, right? And so you have something called a spell. So a words manipulating reality, right? I mean, women's words dig mines, right? You could have an excavation spell, I suppose, in Dungeons and Dragons, where you cast a spell and it excavates the ground. But women's words are an excavation spell, and a particularly cruel one, often in the modern world, because a woman will be more likely to say yes to an engagement proposal if there's a big-ass expensive diamond attached to a ring of gold. And so the woman's word yes is an excavation spell that dislodges billions of tons of earth from the world and enslaves, half-enslaves a bunch of poor people in Africa and so on, right? So, and I remember there was some sitcom from many years ago with Michael Rapaport, I think it was. I don't remember what it was, but I just remember this little slice where he proposes to some woman and the woman is mad because the diamond he gave her, she said it's yellow, it's like urine. And he's like, no, it's champagne, right? It's a champagne diamond. And she's mad about this because, you know, the four C's, right? You got to get a clear carrot, blah, blah, blah. So there's a war of words, right? She's saying, this is yellow, it's like pea-colored diamond. And he's like, no, it's champagne. Because pea is negative, champagne is positive. So they're in a war of words over the value, right? And so there's a spell, right? Women will cast a spell. Men work with reality. Women work with people. Men work with things. Women work with language. Men influence as muscle. Women influence with reputation and gossip and conversation and so on. So this is sort of the two worlds. And witches generally, like male mages, right? I remember being in Africa and playing Scrabble with my father, and I used the word mage, which he didn't believe was a word. And so because I had played some D&D at this point in my life, I knew that mage was a word. So male wizards are generally, you know, they're casting material spells, right? Fireballs and so on, right? And there are some charm person and influence spells and so on, but generally it's lightning bolts coming out of their fingers and fireballs and so material elemental spells, because men work with nature. Women, who are magic users, right, magic wizards or witches, what they generally tend to do is they tend to work with reputation, they work with love spells, and they provoke ambition in men, right? So if you, a play that I was in, I played Macbeth many years ago, and Macbeth, of course, is stimulated into regicide, into the murder of the king, through his wife's ambition. So men affect the world in productive ways through a relentless commitment to manipulating reality, right? Building something, going to hunt something, and, you know, don't come home till you've got some food, right? So men affect reality through a relentless commitment to material change. And women, of course, affect reality through a relentless commitment to manipulation of people rather than of objects. And, I mean, this manipulation, it sounds like just terrible and so on. And I don't necessarily mean it that way. It can be for the positive. Often it's for the negative. But I don't want to cast manipulation in a purely negative light, because a women's demand for male ambition has got us to where we are. So I'm not going to say it's all some terrible thing. I love life. I love having a brain, being able to think, and all of that is a result of women's demand for material progress and all of that over the course of history. So I'm not going to say it's all just some big terrible thing, but that is sort of the reality of the way things are. And, you know, one of the real challenges that capitalism brought to non-capitalist countries was that under capitalism, women in general are more K-selected, or they want more K-selected mates. It doesn't take a huge amount of parental investment if you live in some fairly primitive area, which is hunting and gathering. You can teach that probably in a month or two to your kids, but to raise a kid to be a successful, say, middle or senior manager in a capitalist economy that's fairly complex and requires a lot of parental investment and so on. So women tend to be more K-selected in capitalism. But then, of course, capitalism produces things like the birth control pill, and then produces enough wealth for the welfare state, which then makes everyone R-selected again. So the pendulum swings, and looks like it's swinging back at the moment. So, okay, so the sort of general background, let's talk about witches in particular. So witches brew potions and cast spells of influence, right? So, you know, drink this potion and he'll fall in love with you for sure, and so on. And they generally will catch people like the devil does in sort of promises, like the Midas touch, right? So everything you touch turns to gold and you think that's a wonderful thing, but then you can't eat or drink because your food turns to gold, which you can't eat, right? So they will catch you by giving you exactly what you want. And in your greed, you don't look at the fine print, right? This is sort of a demonic thing as well, right? In your greed, you don't look at the fine print, right? So in the financial system at the moment, we're seeing the fallout of a commitment to something other than meritocracy, right? So in a meritocracy, it's the most able, no matter what, wins. We have had standards for 50 years now, other than a meritocracy, and that which was built by the meritocracy is failing, because that's what happens, right? If you build something according to a meritocracy and then you replace your standard with something other than meritocracy, whatever is built is going to fail. It's going to fall, right? So we're swinging back to the K-selection stuff, which you can, you can read about in my novel, The Present, which you can get at freedomain.locals.com. So the witches, when they're young, the sort of sorceress, the succubus, the temptress, the dryad, and so on. I mean, I know these aren't all witches, but sort of the archetype of the young female, which, and there was a bookstore many years ago in Toronto. It may still be around for all I know, but I doubt it. The book I went to, used to go and visit in the Pape Village called the Purple Village, went long gone. But there was a book, and it was about female magic and so on, and it was called Maiden, Mother, Crone, right? Sort of the three phases of womanhood. Maiden, young, beautiful woman, mother, and then a crone is sort of the old. And crone is got a sort of witchy, magical sort of flavor or taste to it. And witches generally don't have, they don't have children, they don't have husbands. So that's important, right? And they're generally negative. And of course, you can think of the witches in Macbeth. The witches in Macbeth are a symbol for his wife's ambition, Lady Macbeth's ambition, which itself is pretty naked and upfront. But even that, even her character, very incredibly written character, can't contain the depths and power of a female malicious provocation, right? Female malicious provocation, sort of caring thing, right? So, and of course, the witches in Macbeth serve to include the audience in Macbeth, right? So if you're not Macbeth, you're not a prince or someone in line to the throne, you don't have a king staying at your castle, then you, what's the story about? It's very distant. But if he is seduced by these witches, well, we can all be seduced by witches, by female manipulation. So it's a way of drawing the audience in so that even if you're not having a king stay at your castle, and this is something to watch out for, right? Because, and this is the whole thing around sort of magic and manipulation, there's all of this behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on in the world that, you know, practical, competent men don't really see. And I mean, put myself in this category, it's been a lot of sort of uncovering all of this machinery that goes on in the world and sort of around the world, behind the world. And so men, you know, what are we out there? We're out there fighting off wolves and hunting deer and scouting the outside of the territory and scaring off other men or engaging in skirmishes or outright battles. We're dealing with all this very practical stuff that is up front. You know, it's up front. It's tangible, material, empirical, practical. And we don't see very much this sort of web of language that goes on behind the scenes to control and manipulate our entire environment. We don't see this web of language that goes on behind the scenes to manipulate our entire environment, right? So, I mean, in my own experience, sort of studying practical matters and engaging in debates with sort of facts, reason, and evidence, sure, okay. But there's this whole language-based thing that was going on about me behind the scenes that ended up with me being deplatformed, right? I wasn't deplatformed because I was just really bad at arguing or you know, just made a fool of myself on a regular basis. I didn't lose credibility because of that. So this whole language thing is going on behind the scenes, and magic and temptation and devils and ghosts and goblins and this, that, all of that has to do with just not seeing what's going on behind the scenes. This sort of vague sense that there's a physics in the world outside the physics of our senses. And the physics of the world has to do with your reputation and positivity and negativity and gossip and rumor mongering and all of the reputational destruction and lies and all. Like, there's this physics that goes on in the world that relies on practical men to feed it, right? The gossip mongers need food, just like everybody else. So they rely on men to go out and do the hunting. And in return for the men going out and do the hunting, they reward and punish the reputations of the hunters based upon their own particular preferences, right? So the idea that there is, let's say, you know, here's a typical scenario, right? Some young girl wants the prince to fall in love with her, but she can't attract him, so she goes to this old crone in the woods, and she gives up something important. The old crone brews her a potion, and then she gets the prince to drink the potion. The prince falls in love with her, and the story sort of plays out from there, right? So what is going on here? Well, what's going on here is that a lot of people think that they are romantically successful or romantic failures merely based on sort of physical looks, physical prowess. Of course, that has a lot to do with it. But it also has a lot to do with reputation, right? So women behind the scenes are like, they're sort of, they're eggs, their uterus, their future children, what are they looking for? Well, they're looking for men who can provide. Now, when they're young, they're in lust, and a boy who's, you know, handsome and charismatic and so on could be a sociopath, could be a player, could cheat on her, and then she's left, historically, she'd be left with a child. Right, so what keeps the marriage together tends to be, obviously, positive behaviors on the part of the marital partners, but also the shame, the attack, the reputational damage, the ostracism, which is all opinion, right? It's all language-based. It's not objective, and we know that because it used to be that single moms were shamed. Now single mothers are celebrated. I mean, it's not like you can talk arsenic's reputation into doing you good rather than harming you, right? So again, men dealing with objective facts, it's kind of confusing. Like, the swings and flows and ebbs and tide in, tide out of language can make that which was formerly destructive now virtuous, and that which was formerly virtuous now destructive, right? So it used to be that being good at math was a plus, and now being good at math is a sign of some sort of racism. Like, so the idea that, you know, you can't talk a wolf into lying down and burying its throat and, you know, that you have at it, right, and kill it. You can't talk a lion into being friendly. So men are used to subjugating opinions to reality because men deal with, evolutionarily speaking, we're evolved to deal with things, not reputations and opinions and so on, right? And so women will tend to rely, historically, would tend to rely on the opinions of older women in order to determine who is a good man or a bad man. In other words, the opinions of older women had a lot to do with the sexual success or the romantic or pair bonding or reproductive success of the men. Really, reproductive success is where it's at. So the older women, like the older witches have a love potion and so on, so the older women have the power to make a prince fall in love with a pauper. They can brew a magic potion. Well, that magic potion has a lot to do with reputation. So if the older women around, and I say prince, let's just say the desirable man in the environment, right? Because with the prince, you've got the whole political thing. So just say a desirable man. And we'll call him Chad, right? He's a desirable man, right? So the older women, if there's someone that Chad is attracted to, that they don't want him to marry, what do the older women do? Well, they trash the girl's reputation, they stress her out, they make her, she doesn't sleep, she's short-tempered, she's stressed, and so they make her unappealing by attacking her reputation, harming her relationships. And if they harm her relationships, what happens is, she becomes less attractive. I mean, not just physically and tired and dark circles under her eyes and all of that and bad-tempered, but she becomes unattractive because the man needs more than just his wife. Like, historically, a man needed more than just his wife to raise his children. Right? So if the women, particularly the older women in the tribe or the village, if they really don't like a woman, then all of the resources that the older women could bring to bear on raising the man's children will be absent. And so his wife is going to have a way tougher time raising his kids, right? It takes a village, and they no aunts, no grandmothers, no, right? So it's just going to be her trying to do it all, and that's going to be pretty exhausting. And of course, there's the secondary issue as well, that this was not entirely uncommon. If his wife were to die in childbirth, if he married a woman that the other women didn't like, then they would be less likely to propose a second bride for him, should his first wife die in childbirth or die of something, right? Then the other women would be less available to him because his reputation would be trashed because the older women didn't like his first choice of bride. Now, the men would be like, well, she's hot and she seems nice, and like, go for it, right? But So this idea that the older women can brew a potion that has a young man fall in love or out of love with a young woman, that is, it's a very real thing. So they can do that. They can also, they can trash a young woman's reputation, which destroys, or it significantly doesn't completely destroy, it significantly undermines her attractiveness, both physically, in terms of she can't sleep, she's in terms of emotionally, she's short-tempered and stressed, and in terms of future resources, there won't be any. So, yeah, that's pretty rough. So, now conversely, what they can do is they can talk up to the young man, they can talk up this other woman, right? They could talk up this other woman. So, you know, the Betty and Veronica thing, right? Was it Veronica or the Marianne and Ginger thing? Ginger were like in Gilligan's Island. Ginger was the sultry, seductress movie star thing, and Dawn Wells, who played Marianne, was like the girl next door, and so on. And Betty and Veronica, I can't remember which was which. I think Veronica was the hot one and Betty was the sensible one. So there's the hot girl and there's the sensible girl. And in their most benevolent ways, the older women are steering the young men away from the hot girl and towards the sensible girl. In a benevolent way, right? If the women want to destroy the man, then they'll steer, or whoever, they'll steer men towards the hot girls rather than the sensible girls, right? And one example of this, I mean, let's really go wide in our informational gathering. If you look at the movie Clerks, it was a breakout movie by Kevin Smith from many years ago. You have Jay and Silent Bob. And Jay was played by Jason Mewes, who was like a real motor-mouth drug addict, I think. I think Clerks 2 was made to go to rehab or something. But they are the muses, right? They are the people who silently observe and comment upon the scene. They're like the Greek chorus who provide the moral, or the narrator who provides the moral of the story. And in Clerks, the lead character is tempted by two women, right? One is the hot woman, who's the seductress and volatile and emotionally immature and dangerous, but hot, right? And the other is his girlfriend. I think it's his girlfriend, who is nice and sensible, not, you know, super hot or anything, but nice and sensible, and, you know, brings him food and is even-tempered and all that, right? And Jay and Silent Bob, as the muse, they provide the moral of the story. And the moral of the story, as they say later on, they say, you know, this one girl comes in, she's pretty, but she's volatile, she's dangerous. I'm really paraphrasing, it's been like decades since I saw the movie, but I remember this part somewhat. You know, here's the one girl, she's not real nice to you, and so on. When there's this other girl, she brings you lasagna, she takes care of you, she's thoughtful, she's caring. And that's the moral of the story. To wake someone up to qualities of character rather than qualities of appearance. To virtue rather than hotness, right? So, as far as women can perform magic to make someone fall in love, well, yeah. They can trash the reputation of women they don't like. They can raise the reputation and praise the women that they do like. And men will, to some degree, follow this. Again, men have the biological imperative, the hotness and all of that. And women do, too. But this can all be overcome. I mean, there wouldn't be any point to philosophy or any need for it if we just followed our instincts and everything was fine. So, yes, there are definitely spells that women can cast that affect relationships, right? Because most witches, they have spells that affect relationships, fall in and out of love, and in particular stimulate ambition and so on. And yes, women can do this, right? I mean, I vividly remember I was dating some woman in my 20s, and a friend of mine met her, and he's like, marry her, dude. Put a ring on it. He just really, really liked her. And then, honestly, it had a big effect on me. It had a big effect on me. I didn't end up marrying her, but it had a big effect on me. So I think that is really something to consider. That yes, there is a magic that particularly older women, through their approval and disapproval, can raise or lower the marriage market value, right? So there's the sexual market value, which is hotness in general. Then there's the marriage market value, which is stability and loyalty and so on, right? So, of course, men are drawn to signs of reproductive fitness, but men are also drawn to signs of virtue, because if you have a hot woman and you're not a super alpha yourself, then she could abandon you with the kids to go and get someone better, which means that your kids are less likely to survive, because then you're going to have a stepmom, your kid's going to be traumatized, they won't like you, and your intellectual lineage, if not your physical lineage, your intellectual lineage, your moral lineage, your authority lineage will just end if your kids don't like you. Or she might, you know, alpha sex and beta bucks, right? So she might marry the beta provider, but then end up passing off the alpha's children as the beta's children, and then his lineage, biological lineage, ends, right? So, I mean, women understand female evil in a way that, oh gosh, I mean, we men are fairly helpless with this, right? So, you know, we build giant armies to protect our lands, and then, you know, we're undermined and undone by language, right? So it's really tough to understand female evil. Women get it, right? But men, we have a very tough time with it as a whole. So and so we consign it to the realm of magic, right? There's these subterranean forces and devils and potions and spells and temptations and voodoo and all this sorcery that's going on behind the scenes we don't really understand. Well, that's female language manipulation of a reputation, right? I mean, if you think of a game of chess, right? Two men playing chess, they each move their own pieces. But women throughout history didn't get to play chess directly. So they had influence, not power. Direct power, right? It's arguable the pen is mightier than the sword. Well, I mean, of course, now we know for sure, the debate has been settled forever, that the pen is mightier than the sword. So women can't play chess directly, but they can influence men. They can influence men. And the way that they influence men when they're young is through sexuality, and the way that they influence men when they're older is through language, which is why the young witches tend to be hot, right? That's their sorcery. And then the old witches tend to have more powerful magic. And the magic, again, being sophistry and language and reputational support and attack and all of that kind of stuff, right? So, and of course, because women are also, were educated the young throughout most of human history, the women are shaping the next generation, which is, you know, real sorcery, real magic to a lot of men, right? Men feed. And women indoctrinate, right? Men hunt, and women program. So who has more power? Well, I think we all know the answer to that, looking at the modern world, right? So I think that aspect of female sorcery is important. So let's talk about the childlessness, right? Because the more malevolent the witch, the more childless she tends to be. So let's talk about that childlessness. So the great challenge of childless women for society as a whole, I mean, if they're childless through accidents of nature and infertility issues, again, nothing but sympathy and all that, but childless women are quite dangerous in society as a whole. And we're sort of seeing that, I think, now, right? As childlessness has increased, so has the use of antidepressants and all of this, again, sort of caroting phenomenon and so on, right? The childlessness for women is a great risk for society, because the entire maternal instincts of women kind of flail around and attach to something else, right? And so childless women, a big challenge, which is why society does as much as it can to get women attached into pair-bonded monogamous relationships when they're as young as pretty, as humanly possible, right? I mean, that's what society tries to do. I mean, male human semen contains antidepressants, believe it or not. And so women who are middle-aged and single, you can look at the antidepressant use as a semen substitute. which is interesting, but, you know, so, and in particular, the older women, so 90% of women who are childless, you know, sort of bitterly regret being childless. But it's too late to fix, right? So half of women 30 and older who don't have kids will never end up having kids, and 90% of the women who don't have kids regret it, like with the deep bitterness, right? And women have a way of, I write about this in my novel, The Future. Get it for subscribing at freedomain.locals.com. The main character is very, very good at reading people and manipulating. He's kind of a sorcerer in his own right. What he does is he goes to his wife. There's a divorce that's going on. He goes to his wife and he says to his wife, boy, you know, you got to stay away from this woman because, you know, she's going through a divorce, which means it's going to spread, which means this, that, and the other, right? So you gotta not be around this woman because it's she's like a virus that's going to spread, right? So a woman who's going through a divorce will often end up poisoning the marriages of those around her. Like, I'm not going down alone. You know? If I'm going down, everyone's going down with me, right? So a woman who is going through a really destructive situation will often end up poisoning the... I mean, she'll be so heartbroken and she'll be bitter and she'll tend to extrapolate to all men and all marriages the troubles within her own marriage, which is why you get this marriage as an institution of slavery. It's like, I don't know who the hell you're married to, but... Well, actually, you kind of do, right? The feminists are just talking about the terrible men in their lives. So this sort of social contagion is sort of, it's a very real thing. It's a very important thing, this sort of social contagion. And again, that's a kind of sorcery that the main character in my last novel is aware of. And it's very unusual, right? Most men are just like, you know, well, two of my wife's friends are getting divorced. I don't know why my marriage is in trouble. Like, because men have that distance, that separation. And because we've evolved to deal more with material reality, we don't think about reputational stuff as much, right? It's not really an accident that in America and other countries as well, laws punishing libel and slander have been weakened, right, as women have gained political ascendancy. Because women want to have that weapon. And men do, of course, right? Men do, but a little bit more women, I think. So the social contagion of bitter childlessness is tough. And, of course, people who don't have children, right? This is another reason why people without children are viewed with some suspicion in general societies historically. Women without children, this is true of men without children too, they have a lot more time to cause trouble in the world. I can't overemphasize this enough, how unbelievably time-consuming parenting is. How unbelievably time-consuming parenting is. And when you have little kids, you know, maybe they sleep 9, 10, 11, 12 hours a day, but you don't know when they wake up and you've got to stay home the whole time. You can't go out. And when they're awake, they need you. They don't lie in their cribs. They don't play by themselves. They need you. They'll cry for you. They'll come for you. They'll interact with you. They want you. And so that's it, man. I mean, your 24 hours is for your kids. 24 hours a day is for your kids. You don't know when they're going to wake up. When they do wake up, they're always going to need something. They always want to get picked up. They're hungry. They're thirsty. They want to play. I mean, it's a massive time-consuming job. I mean, my daughter's 14 and change now. And, yeah, it's beginning to diminish, right? And it should be, right? You spend more time with peers and friends, and that's great, right? But people without children have, I mean, my gosh, they have tens and tens and tens of thousands of hours advantage on people who with kids. And, I mean, I just have one kid, right? I mean, you have a bunch of kids. I mean, to some degree, a bunch of kids will cancel each other out. A little bit. Having one kid is easier when they're younger. It's more time consuming when they get older because they don't have other kids to play with in the house, right? I mean, in the neighborhood, yes, but not in the house. So the issue of suspicion around. So the childless women are bitter. They almost can never resist the social contagion aspect of their childlessness. And again, as childlessness has risen, so also has resentment to men, resentment against men risen, right? So people who are childless, you know, whether gay or straight, but people who are childless, one of the problems is that you can't compete in terms of time commitment, right? I mean, a childless woman can write 20 books about how terrible the patriarchy and men are, while the women with children are actually raising their kids and can't write 20 books, right? There's a suspicion because there's an outside influence that childless people have. And this is the reason why witches tend to be childless, right? They can perform their magic, they can perform their sorcery, they live alone in the woods, they're isolated, they've got no kids, no extended family, they're solitary. And because they're solitary, they can do whisper campaigns. I mean, I know we say solitary like they're childless, right? So they can do their whisper campaigns, and they have that malevolence that can influence things. And the more shielded and covert they are, the more they can influence children, right? They can be around children, and they can sow the seeds of bitterness with children and so on. So this is the sort of two phases. This is why the middle-aged phase is usually not present for witches, right? The middle-aged phase is usually not present for witches because they're sort of young and hot, and they have all of that power. And then, you know, in the blink of an eye, they become this old one-toothed, half-blind, roomy, wizened old crone, cackling and you know, so on. But have great power, right? They have great power. And they have a great commitment to influence, to poison tongue campaigns, to gossip, to maliciousness, right? So, yeah, people who don't have kids are less invested, of course, in the long-term health of the society and have a great deal of bitterness. And where does that bitterness go? So they have a great deal of bitterness, and the women without kids, they have a great deal of bitterness, often, not always, but often, they have a great deal of bitterness, and also they have a great deal of time unavailable to parents in which to enact that bitterness. So the idea that sort of witches are dangerous, highly influential, and manipulate and control relationships and so on. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a sort of very real thing. It's a very real thing. And yeah, by the by, I was just thinking about The Crucible by Arthur Miller the other day, just about The Crucible, which is about Salem witch trials. Obviously, I was provoked by the McCarthyism and the communist witch hunts and so on. They call it witch hunts, right? Like, apparently communists are as fictional as witches. It's just a wild thing, right? Oh, well, of course, that would be the play that would be promoted. It's anti-Christian, too, which is a plus for them. So, for the socialists and leftists. So, yeah, you can't do the middle-aged thing. Because the middle-aged thing for women is, for most women, it's raising kids and having a husband and all that, and witches generally have to be single. Now, witches also tend to have a habit. If you do see a middle-aged witch, and I think you could classify the mother in Snow White as a middle-aged witch, there tends to be this ferocious hostility towards youth and beauty, right? So, Snow, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all, right? It's supposed to be the Snow White mom, or the queen, and oh, it's Snow White, and then there's this sort of bitterness and this hatred. And of course, the reason why middle-aged witches are fairly not particularly portrayed is because, and if they are portrayed, there's generally this hostility towards youth and beauty, and that's because they are middle-aged, and therefore they don't have the youth and beauty, but they also don't have some of the strange power that comes with just being old in a traditional society, right? The authority, the respect your elders, and all that kind of stuff, right? You know, so the outsider who comes in and tells the truth and has great power and so on, right? You can see this. I mean, Quint is one in the movie Jaws, and Maleficent is one who shows up and blows the kingdom up with truth and so on. So you can't see much of the middle-aged stuff because for women who are single, who are childless, middle-aged middle age is a pretty terrible time. And they will, of course, be consumed by, right, young women have the magic of sexual appeal and beauty, and old women have the magic of enmeshed relationships and reputational damage and so on. Now, I just want to sort of, let me stop here and just unravel something which seems like a contradiction and may well be. So I talk about the solitary nature of witches, and then I talk about their capacity to influence things. So isolation and manipulation often go hand in hand, right? So because you have this, like, the witch alone in the woods, the young woman goes out and sells her soul for a potion to make the alpha love her or whatever, right? So how do we reconcile this contradiction? Well, if you're embedded in social relationships, but you have no actual contact with anyone, no honesty, no intimacy, no love, then you are both very isolated, and all you can get is through manipulation, right? So, you know, if you love your mother, she was a wonderful mother, she was caring and thoughtful and all of that, and wise, and helps you with your life, then, you know, when she needs things, when she gets older, I think you'll be happy to oblige and help her out, right? I mean, there's been lots of deposits, and so when she needs some withdrawals, it's totally fair, right? Now, if you had a mean, destructive, abusive mom, then when she needs things, when she gets older, you don't actually have any love, connection, intimacy. You still have a, quote, relationship, you know, love, connection, and intimacy. So what do you do? What does she do to get what she wants? Well, she threatens, she bullies, she manipulates, she punishes, she holds money over your head in terms of a will and so on. And so she manipulates, right? So you can be in proximity with people, and the degree to which you're isolated, even while in proximity with people, is the degree to which you will manipulate. And this becomes exaggerated to the point where the old woman lives alone in the woods, yet has fantastical power to manipulate, right? And that's saying that isolation and manipulation are two sides of the same coin. Just remember that when you see someone who's lonely in a crowd, they are almost always manipulating that crowd, because everybody needs resources, particularly when they get old. And if you haven't earned those resources by being a positive and productive and virtuous and helpful member of a family or a society, then you bully, right? I mean, you think of the single moms, and they're like, oh, holding up their kids. Who's going to feed my kids? Who's going to take care of my kids' teeth? Who's going to put a roof over them? Okay, so you don't have love. You don't have the love of a husband who's supposed to provide these things. So you just have to bully and manipulate society as a whole. And of course, it works to the tune of trillions and trillions of dollars a year. So sadly, this kind of manipulation works, right? And also, like, a man has to survive, right? So if you have a stressful day at your job and you come home to a nagging wife, I mean, you're just going to die. Like, sorry to say it, like, you might as well take up smoking and riding backwards on motorcycles in the rain, right? So a man knows that if the woman decides to make his life stressful, then it's just a form of slow murder, right? She's basically just killing him because he's out there trying to... And Al Bundy used to talk about this in this pretty low-rent but occasionally funny show called Married with Children. Like, he can't wait for death. Like, his life is so... His job is stressful and boring, and his wife is nagging and unpleasant. And he's like, he prays for death. Like, he can't take me soon enough, right? You know, Al, that's going to kill you. And he's like, I should be so lucky, right? And pray for death, right? So a woman can kill a man, the slow murder of stress, right? Just nag him to go get money so that he's stressed at work, and then nag him when he gets home, and, you know, then he, and then withhold sex, and, you know, and drive him to an early grave. It's pretty easy. So, you know, the fact that witches have death potions, it's like, yeah, women can kill men's reputation, they can kill their reproductive chances, they can kill them through stress. So yeah, it's pretty important who you end up marrying. So from that standpoint, like, you sort of look at the magical powers of women, in particular, of course, single women. Now, the women who kill a man through stress, they tend to be portrayed as poisoners. Like, women tend to kill through poison, men through more overt violence and so on, right? So the poison is stress, withholding sex and stressing the man out and so on, and turning his kids against him, and, you know, now, of course, it's wielding the legal system against him and false accusations, right? Just, it's murderousness, right, on the part of women, because, you know, stress is implicated, not responsible directly for, but stress is implicated in, like, over 90% of illnesses and ailments, it has an effect to some degree or another. So, you know, the attack upon reputation is often an attack upon the autonomous nervous system, right, the fight or flight mechanism. So the fact that there are death potions, and witches have death potions, so that is also something that is not talked about. And, you know, a frank discussion of female evil doesn't look like it's happening this, or females' capacity for evil, it doesn't really look like it's happening this cycle, because an overt discussion of female evil will ban female evildoers against you to destroy your reputation, and therefore men tend to avoid frank discussions of female evil, because the female evildoers will band together to prevent the man from reproducing, or they'll attack his marriage, or attack his resources, or whatever it is, right? So it doesn't look like we're getting around to having a frank discussion of female evil, but I do think that it shows up in the idea of witches. And, you know, there are good witches, but the reason they're so rare is that if witches are an analogy for female whisper campaigns and reputational destruction and talking up or down the marriage market value of women they favor or disfavor, and all of the sort of whisper mechanics that go on that men are generally largely unaware of until something really blows up in their faces, and then they're just kind of uncomprehending. The reason why there are so few good witches in history is that women, in general, don't fight. Right? Good women generally don't fight the immoral women in their vicinity. And that's because this is sort of the mean girls thing, right? See, the mean girls thing, and then the mean girls, and the nice girl. The nice girls don't fight the mean girls. And really, that's because the nice girls are fully aware of the power of the mean. The men are instinctually aware of the power of the mean females, the female evil. They're kind of instinctually, which is why they avoid the topic as a whole. But women, good women, are, they really do understand the power of evil women, and how they sort of really, I mean, men deal with the physics of the material world, and women deal with the physics and manipulate and control the physics of the social world, and the social world is where reproduction occurs, right? The social world is where children are born, well, conceived and born and raised and so on. And so the material world is subservient to the social world, right? Objectivity is subservient to subjectivity. Objectivity is necessary to feed subjectivity, but subjectivity, like reputation and who's good and who's bad and who's sexy and who's not and who's right and who's wrong, that is manipulatable, and that outlasts sort of material world. So yeah, you got to eat in order to gossip, but gossip determines the future in a way that food doesn't, right? Food is morally neutral, gossip is morally charged, or, you know, so I mean, so to think back on some of the more controversial things that I guess it didn't, you know, again, my whole life has been saying things that seem 2 + 2 = 4 and people losing their shit over that. But when you look back on some of the more controversial stuff that really made people lose their shit on Twitter, like, you know, talking about you should have kids, right? Well, the powers that be need a lot of childless women so that those childless women will undermine society. As a whole, in general, right? Lots of exceptions. And listen, childlessness for women tends to be destructive, and a lack of ambition for men tends to be equally destructive. So we'll sort of talk about the male side of things another time, but to promote childlessness, I mean, obviously promotes dependence upon the state and so on. Women are going to need some security and protection. That's what they're driven for biologically. The woman's need for security is equivalent to the man's need for sex. And which is to say, of course, men like security and women like sex, but doesn't tend to be quite as strong a motivating factor. But when you keep women childless, they vote for the state, and they will also undermine the patriarchy, which, if sort of male authority and strength and competence and power is as respected as female strength and competence and power, you tend to have a good balance in society, in a healthy society where children are raised well and kept safe and protected. Therefore, you have less of a need for a state, right? So destabilizing the family and attacking men, keeping women childless, it's all sort of thing. And it's all sorcery, right? It all tends to be sorcery. Like, no one's out there taking the fallopian tubes out of women with a spork, right? They are simply using a sort of infertility sorcery, like a curse womb spell, so to speak, based on language, and it's really powerful. It's really powerful. And, you know, you tempt women with the extension of their youth and beauty, right? So I've said this before, but, 18 to 20, right, should be a two-year flare-up of youth and beauty, and then you have kids and get busy and, all of that. Youth and beauty tends to get scraped away by labor and children. And yes, you've got women into their 40s and even their 50s, looking at you, Elizabeth Hurley, like milking this sort of youth and beauty thing decades after its intended purpose. And again, we can say that that's good or bad, but it's certainly not what we evolved for. And so, yeah, so I hope this makes some sense. Let me know if you'd like me to do more. I was thinking of warlocks, but they're sort of pretty rare as a whole in society because men tend to work with things rather than language, with the exception of priests and so on and that sort of thing. So warlocks tend to be relatively rare relative to witches. But yeah, I think witches are an attempt for people to point out the hidden mystical magic and physics of those who are isolated and manipulative and highly dangerous. And that if you fall into their spells, you do lose your soul in a big way. And it's an attempt to highlight and grapple with female evil. So yeah, let me know what you think. Lots of love from up here. freedomain.com/donate. If you'd like to help out the show, I would just hugely appreciate it. I actually kind of need it. So if you could help out the show, freedomain.com/donate, I'd appreciate it. Lots of love. Bye.